Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals. Hello, and welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, your host, and I have the distinct pleasure of bringing Colin Christmas to my listeners. Colin is the managing director of Eagle Certification Group and responsible for developing their international growth. He has tremendous experience spanning over 20 years in the food industry, as well as significant work at Nestle. Colin has the privilege of working in numerous countries around the world, which have helped develop an excellent understanding for people, process, and systems, and working in many different cultures. While at Nestle, he was the Director of Supplier Management Improvement and was responsible for food safety and quality of all Tier 1 ingredient and packaging suppliers. Previous to that, he had a regional operational role in North and South America with focus on management systems, including ISO 9001, 14000, and several others. Prior to that, he's had various roles in increasing responsibility around the world, Switzerland, Australia, et cetera, in the areas of business excellence. Colin has a Bachelor of Arts degree in Computer and Business Analytics from the University of Huddersfield, with specialization in quality control and quality management systems. He additionally has certificates from Wageningen University in Research for Food Safety Management and from the London Business School for Executive Leadership Programming. Colin, it is my pleasure to introduce you to my listeners and welcome to our show.
Thanks, Deb. Appreciate the invite.
All right. Well, thank you so much. So for my listeners, I just want to give a little bit of context on how I know Colin and why I've brought him to you. We had a supplier-customer relationship back when Colin was working for Nestle and I was working at Givaudan. So that started our journey to get to understand what was important in food safety and quality, as well as the cultural aspect of food safety. And I've had the pleasure of continuing that relationship with him, even as we went in separate directions on collaborating on several business ventures. So he is a great technical voice, as well as he presents so many insights and helps you maybe even rethink what you thought about food safety. So Colin, I'd love to open up this. Could you just share a little bit about your business journey and what are you most proud of along the way?
So thanks, Deb. I think I've had a really exciting business journey in my career. So 20 years with Nestle. I started off in Nestle UK and I had, as you mentioned in the intro, some opportunities to work in Switzerland, Australia, Canada, the US. I'm now located down in Brazil. So really, it has been an adventure. And sometimes I joke, I became a global product of a global organization and ultimately had quite a good insight into globalization and the processes of standardization. As companies grow and realize that they have to have similar ways of working around the world. So one of the key things for me, I started off in the UK, but quickly ended up in Switzerland, and we had a global standardization project. And ultimately, it was all about defining common ways of working, best practices, and essentially really trying to get many markets, Nestle markets around the world, to talk the same language. So what I really mean by that, it's a lot of harmonization. And that means a lot of data harmonization, process harmonization. And ultimately, why do we do that? We want to drive efficiencies, effectiveness. And the interesting thing is when you start looking at processes, you find some interesting things in organizations. And ultimately, the ideal situation is you want to eliminate and challenge the manual processes or the poor processes and ultimately automate whatever you can. And the key thing is when you do that on a global level with a company the size of Nestle, and other people would have experienced this as well, other big multinationals, is the trickle-down effect to all the markets and all the business units, all the factories, distribution centers, head offices around the world will have a huge benefit. And it was a great experience for me to watch that play out. And ultimately, I feel very proud of the contribution I made as Nestle went on that journey. And ultimately, there's some good things that come out of that. And there's some good learnings that come out of it as well. And what some of the things I found is one of the key things I always say, it takes a minute to implement a bad process and a lifetime to fix it. So these are the kind of challenges you see as well. So that's the downside is when you come across some poor processes. And ultimately, really to fix that, it's all about consulting all the key stakeholders, looking back, trying to find out how to fix that. And a lot of cases, when you look at some of these decisions, they haven't been made with all the key stakeholders. And you look at some leadership decisions that's based on pride and ego. And sometimes there's a reluctance to go back and look in the mirror and fix some of those. So a lot of impact convince, a lot of discussion goes on. And ultimately, we have to learn as part of the business transformation how to fix some of those things.
Wow, there is a lot in there. And thank you for that. So I completely resonate with me, you know, as being a quality professional, process improvement, you want to do things right and start with all the stakeholders. Because the trickle-down effect and seeing it unfold is absolutely fantastic. But tell me a little bit more about where you found that you may have put in a bad process or a bad process existed. And to your point, you had to deal with egos and pride. How do you navigate that? Because I find some of my listeners, the people that I mentor, have to go through that in order to break through and move the organization forward. So what's your experience with that?
I think like a lot of things, when you look at standardizing projects on a global level, you're always going to have individuals, and that could be at a market level, it could be at an individual person level, that will say, hey, we do things differently, and that's not going to work here, and this will impact my particular role in a negative way. So these are some of the challenges you come against. And ultimately, the key thing is to try and explain the big picture to anyone within the organization. And ultimately, when you start looking across the whole business, you have to look holistically at all the moving parts. And if you can explain the bigger picture, and if you can explain the implications of, yes, there may be some problems or implications to a particular role, but ultimately, when you move to integrated systems, integrated processes, the overall end-to-end, should we say, throughout the supply chain, ultimately has to be better than what it was before. And I think when people then understand the part they play in that bigger picture, when they understand the cross-functional implications, it really helps. So hopefully what I try to do is to try and see the bigger picture, try to articulate that to the organization, and ultimately try and get that buy-in from individuals. And sometimes that takes time. Sometimes you need to have a lot of dialogue and ultimately stakeholder consultation, as I explained before.
So I'm not going to rephrase that. Well said. Starting out, understanding common points of our mission and vision, what is the overall strategy? I too, when I go into organizations, find that that's the best way to ground the conversation, start building consensus and working forward rather than trying to fight through some of the minutiae that may be part of the problem. So that's fantastic. So you share with me at Nestle, you've had the opportunity to work on global projects and hopefully making the right decisions to get the right processes and seeing successful trickle down. But I am very curious, in your career, have you ever been dropped into a situation where there may be an existing program, process, something maybe in chaos or crisis, or you had to really make a major change in the organization or the people? And how did you do it?
Yes, I have been in those situations before, and one thing comes to mind. One time in my career at Nestle, this goes back about 10 years now, I was moved to an analytical lab in Dublin, Ohio. So it's my first experience in the US. And ultimately, the lab was going through a lot of change in the Nestle organization. For a start, they had a reporting structure into the US market. And that had changed, where there was a reporting structure where all the laboratories in the Nestle world were reporting directly into the Switzerland HQ. And ultimately, that change really changed a lot of expectations. So with a reporting line directly into our head office in Switzerland, the expectations for performance were much higher than before. There was a lot of new investment into the laboratories, and there was a high expectation there would be a good return on investment. And ultimately, Nestle, they have this, the analytical side of their business. It becomes very high, very important for Nestle, very important to their credibility. And with these expectations higher than before, we had some challenges. I came in and we had some new management also around me in the organization. And we had to ask ourselves some questions, is how do we get this side of the organization to improve and to step up? And one of the things we did, I think, that was really key was we implemented various management systems into the organization that were not mandatory before. And they included a quality management system based on ISO 9001, ISO 14001, which is the environmental management system, and ISO 45001, which is the occupational health and safety system. And ultimately, you asked me the question about how did that help organizational change. Is really, a lot of people challenge me, a lot of discussion to say, hey, management systems, they're just about compliance. They can be a tick in the box. And ultimately, they are important. And sometimes they're needed for commercial reasons as well, that we need to have these type of certifications. But ultimately, that's not my belief. And ultimately, I feel very passionate about what management systems can do. Because it's not just about compliance, it really is about people and it really is about processes. And if you really want to drive improvement, management systems are the key. Effectively, you're looking at efficiencies and effectiveness with these management systems. And ultimately, the key here is I keep saying management systems. And ultimately, some people say, oh, it's Colin, he's talking about systems again. And I say, no, I'm talking about management. Ultimately, leadership is the key here. What does leadership do? Leadership drive behaviors. What do? Behaviors drive the culture of an organization. So it's not about systems. It's about a structured way to put your management in charge, to allocate the right roles and responsibilities in the organization, to understand the efficiencies and the effectiveness of your systems that you've got to drive, and ultimately bring out the leadership, which is mandatory, necessary to be successful with these kind of things. And I'll give you an example with when we talk about management systems. I mentioned the ISO 45001, which is the occupational health and safety management system. Now, when you look at this, you say, okay, what ultimately is the goal for this? Ultimately, the goal is when you put in such a system, you want to protect your people. And ultimately, if you want to protect your people and you want to do it in a systematic way, you then implement this system. Leadership then can actually demonstrate the right behaviors by saying safety first. They practice what they preach. They investigate every single safety incident. They investigate every single safety concern. They look at the behaviors of the individuals in the organization. And that is a perfect example where if it's done correctly, you will reduce safety issues in your organization. The same thing with ISO 14001, you can reduce environmental issues. 9001, you improve customer satisfaction. Food safety, you reduce food safety complaints, or you ultimately reduce recalls. So that's one of the great success stories I had working in an analytical lab for Nestle.
So that's a fantastic story. And to your point, you know, I too play in the same space, you know, quality management systems. We want to try to reduce customer complaints, increase service. We want to make sure we maintain the brand of our customers. But at the end of the day, sometimes those things we put heavy on the compliance leaders, the quality leader, the EH&S leader. And so often, yes, you depend on them for their technical expertise, but then it's those additional leaders that then have to execute against those compliance programs. And if a leader's not walking the walk or not talking to his people or having those crucial conversations about what does it mean to be in compliance and what is the impact, you've missed the mark. So you have a way with words. You have a way with helping people through that mindset. And so I'm sure you have stories. And I'm going to just move away a little bit here. But when you talk about it starts with leadership, has there ever been a situation where, again, there's a leader that, yes, they understand, yes, we need to be in compliance with these standards, but may not have truly embraced the essence? They didn't have 100% of the right mindset. Did you have a situation where through these conversations, that the light bulb went on, that something clicked and you saw a change, whether it was in a leader or a group of people, and then they moved forward to truly embrace the management system?
Yes, Deb, another challenging question for me here. So There's two ways to do this. I think they're senior leaders. There has to be a good understanding about what the accountability is and what the responsibilities are. As you mentioned before, you look at quality systems, environmental management systems, safety systems. There are safety officers. There's maybe a quality manager in an organization. They are ultimately responsible for those systems. But the person, the head of the organization, is ultimately accountable. And I think once that is clearly explained to the head of the organization, where they sit, they can obviously delegate a lot of the work, but you can never delegate the accountability. And there's some interesting things you can do here. One example could be when you have a leadership team, they say, okay, we're implementing this new system. It's for quality management system. And the leadership may nod their heads and say, great, yes, we're all committed. And then you may turn up with a charter and say, this is the charter for the quality management system or the safety management system. And they say, okay, we would now like you to physically sign the charter because we're going to put that on the door. And ultimately, the leadership then may ask the question to say, hey, what am I signing? What am I committing to? And ultimately, a simple act of just putting ink on a piece of paper can really tune people in. And that's a kind of a lighthearted way to think about the first kind of engagement there. But ultimately, a lot of data can help. Depends on the individuals. If you have a safety issue in your organization, you should have data against that. And ultimately, that becomes part of your goal to say, why are we doing this? We want to reduce customer complaints. We want to reduce safety incidents in our organization. We want to reduce recalls and ultimately have a very high level measure of success that leadership can tune into. And one of the final points I would say with leadership is, again, they're not always excited by management systems. They're not always excited by compliance, but in some way you have to explain or articulate what the return on investment is for them. And ultimately, a CEO, it really could be shareholder value and safe employees. A food safety officer, really, it could be a reduction in recalls. These are the kind of things that it's all about trying to solve their biggest headache and tuning into that. What is their objectives? And ultimately, how do you then implement a system that meets their objectives that ultimately, if you can deliver, then any skepticism you may have in the beginning will be short-lived as they will buy into the success and then really stand behind that system and what it actually has achieved.
So those are all excellent points. You know, what I've heard you say, and again, just to recap, is that sometimes when you actually have to make a commitment or a contract, getting leaders to sign and commit their sponsorship for whatever the initiative is or compliance topic is extremely powerful. And to the up-and-coming professional or business leader who's trying to lobby that support, supporting it with data helps define why are we doing this. And if you can tie it some way to something that's tangible, to your point, stakeholder investments, ROI, or even impact to yourself, especially in the food industry. You know, we make a mistake in either quality, we can kill a brand, or if we have an unsafe product that gets to the market, we can negatively impact somebody's life. So it's serious business. And sometimes we have to make those hard connections in order for people to say, I am truly committed to this management system. Fantastic story. And I know we probably have numerous examples of not the proper behavior, but there are many people that do as well. So I want to just take this in another direction, Colin, because again, we've shared tremendous number of stories about how you've impacted organizations, but I have a recommendation, or shall I say, a quote from somebody who you've actually worked for, and I'd love to get your perspective on this. And again, this is the power that Colin brings to the organization. He's rather humble, but here's a bit of an excerpt, and I'd love, Colin, for you to react to this situation. So this person in their recommendation says that during Colin's time in my team, he was a great asset, always bringing new ideas and a passion for getting things done, no matter what the obstacles are. He can be relied upon under pressure, and I found him to be one of the most supportive people I've ever worked with, always looking for ways to reinforce his team. He is flexible to succeed as an individual contributor, but he has also had the breadth as a people leader to manage large teams scattered nationally or internationally. So can you tell me a little bit about this relationship you had? Because obviously they speak very highly about how you performed and the impact on the team.
Thanks, Deb. I appreciate that. I think you're right. You touched on a point that I'm rather humble. So when I hear that praise, I like it, but I'm a little bit shy about how I got there. But essentially, I've had many, many good bosses over the years as I've come up through my career at Nestle. And ultimately, this is another great boss that I had. And really, it was a great experience. My boss had some very good ideas. He definitely thought outside the box. And ultimately, he very much about empowerment. And on that note, I have a very similar approach to how I manage teams, how I lead teams. And ultimately, it really comes down to empowerment. I give you two examples. My first management position in Nestle, I was in Switzerland. I came into a role where I was actually the youngest person in the team. I was managing 9 other people. And my first challenge or my first element of maybe self-doubt is, am I qualified? I'm the youngest guy here. Are my team going to respect me? And ultimately, it was quite a challenge, that first real big leadership position in the organization. And then I had a similar position, my final position, which is where the quote came from my boss there that you read out. And ultimately, I was in a similar position again where I became director for Nestle USA. And again, I was surrounded by much more experienced people than I had. And again, the same questions came up. But the second time on, this was probably 10 years later, the second time I didn't hesitate because I knew what my leadership style was by then. I wasn't quite sure 10 years previously, but essentially what I've come to understand and who I am is that my goal as a leader is to serve. And essentially, what do I mean by that is I sit down with each person in my team. I ask them right at the beginning, where are you now? Where do you want to be? How can I get you there? And ultimately, we have to do our day job, but behind the scenes, I'm constantly thinking about their career path to get them from A to B. Sometimes it's A to C to B. We have to jump over a few walls and so on to get them there. But I think that resonates with people around me that I'm really in it for them. And ultimately, the success of the team is ultimately the people in your team. So I've really had a belief that my leadership style is protect your people, protect the people around you, help, coach, and serve. So that's kind of my mantra. And ultimately, what I mean by that is sometimes you have to protect the people above you as well. You have to protect your boss. Your boss can't have all the answers. And ultimately, they might have some blind spots. And this is how I would introduce some of these subjects with my boss. I would say, hey, do you know this is happening? Is this a blind spot for you? Sometimes the answer is yes, I'm aware of it. Appreciate the insight, Colin. Or sometimes the answer is no, tell me more. And ultimately, when you start seeing all the moving parts with people, it's really important that the team is thinking that way. And ultimately, we are looking out for each other. And if people believe that you genuinely want to protect them and you want to protect the people around you, and it's all about coaching, helping, and serving, then for me, that has been very successful. And that only happens through empowerment. And maybe the final point on that is when you have an empowerment approach with experienced people, you certainly can't micromanage them. And ultimately, these people already have the answers to the problems. And this is where the coaching comes through. And asking some very simple questions, you start getting solutions to problems. A perfect example for me is what I start if someone comes to me and complains and says, look, this is not working, I don't like this, and so on. Firstly, I appreciate that because I get an insight to what's going on in the team. But then secondly, I sit down and say, okay, so let's talk about those problems. But don't come to me with problems and complaints. I want to hear those complaints, but let's go back. And what's your proposal? If you're sitting in this team, I would like to hear a proposal from you, how we're going to fix the problem. And then ultimately, I don't have all the solutions, certainly not with more experienced people around me. But with that kind of groupthink and that responsive approach, one, the manager doesn't get bombarded with all the headaches. They get bombarded with, hey, we have a problem. We have maybe 3 ways to fix it. What is your opinion? And here is the data to support our argument. And ultimately, it becomes a lot easier for the manager then to make data-driven decisions because they have the facts. They don't have to do the legwork. And ultimately, you utilize the manager in the way they should be used. And really, ultimately, the individual feels empowered because guess what? They're not given an answer. they're actually given the opportunity to be part of the solution or even own the solution themselves. Because in some cases, it's a case of, that's a great idea. I want you to run with this. I want you to do the steps to fix this as well. So that's key. Final point is, when you do empower the team and someone does fix something or come up with a great idea, is ultimately they get the credit. And that's been really key for me in a service type leadership position, is I will never acknowledge someone else's work as my own. And if someone does a great job, they will be rewarded, whether it's a pat on the back, whether it is a beer in the pub, or whether it is some sort of Starbucks gift voucher or something. But there has to be some sort of acknowledgement, some sort of mechanism of gratitude as part of that process.
Wow. And that's exactly why I'm excited to bring folks like you to my listeners, because it's through that leadership and how you work through people to elevate and get their best performance, get them to think, you essentially, in service to them, continue to build more leaders. So thank you. So one more question, and this is a great conversation. We're going long today, but we always enjoy these conversations. So inspiration. I find there's a difference between influence and inspiration. Inspiration is when you spark something from within to help you behave, do, or act differently. Influence is also good to move people from A to B, but inspiration is so important. And so if you could think of a time, either in your career, an individual, or a situation that inspired you to maybe move in a different direction or think differently?
I would say one of my predecessors, the previous director to Nestle USA for supply management, was a very big inspiration to me. Amazing leader, hugely influential. She was very much about people, very motivational, and had a very great coaching ability. And maybe the story is, when I first started working with her, she would say to me, "Colleen, I can't work you out." And we had a lot of discussions, and as we became friends, then eventually she understood how I ticked. And that was important to her, because when she understood how I ticked, she could motivate me in a way or coach me in a way that I needed. So I think that for me is an inspirational leader, someone that's willing to take the time. Was there really anything in it for her? Well, I became her successor. So I think in terms of her professional career, she was allowed to leave that role, knowing that she was confident with the person that was coming in. So I would say there was something in it for her to coach me. But ultimately, I think it just came very natural. I think she wanted to share her experience and ultimately make a difference. And ultimately, I find that very inspirational. So I think that for me, I look at that and I look at those kind of leaders and I see that as an inspiration. And it really then makes me reflect back on my career. And maybe the key thing I would say here is, I've looked back now and I've had time to reflect. And I really see my career as maybe two halves. The first half of my career was all about adventure. I managed to be in a global role and I country hopped and I traveled around and I had a hugely rewarding career and an international exposure. And so it was personally rewarding and as well as professionally rewarding. But it was really, I was making decisions about adventure more than anything. And then I've recently, probably in the last few years, I started challenging myself to say, okay, what about the second half of your career? What is going to be the inspiration there? And then ultimately, my mindset's changed a little bit. And ultimately, this individual who inspired me, she was always saying it's about making a difference. And ultimately, I would say that I always felt a little bit cheesy to say, yeah, I want to make a difference. But ultimately, she made me believe that, yeah, you can go out and you can make a difference. So my mindset has changed a little bit in terms of, okay, my first half of my career was about adventure. My second half of my career is about purpose. How do I make a difference? How do I influence industries? How do I have a bigger influence than I have today? And how can I do things that make things better in any shape and form? And really, one of the quotes that inspire me as well on this one is a quote from a lady called Anita Roddick. And if you don't know her, she is the founder of The Body Shop. So a wonderful lady. She created a nonprofit organization in terms of The Body Shop. And one thing that she said that really resonated, she said, "If I can't do something for the public good, what the hell am I doing?" So it really comes back to, I think I challenge myself on that. What am I doing today Is this helping in some sort of shape or form? Am I really tapping into the sense of purpose? And ultimately, that's the journey I've started on in the second half of my career. And as I mentioned, that probably that's only started, or I've only really started thinking that way in the last couple of years. So I'm still relatively new how I would define the second half of my career, but ultimately that's the path I'm walking right now.
So Colin, that was an amazing story because there's so much in that, in who you are. It's full of advice, and you may talk about the second half of your career wanting to inspire on a grander scale. And just so you know, you are, you have, and you continue to do just that. So I encourage folks to look for you because while, yes, you've made an impact on a couple organizations and now in Eagle Certification Group, you now have the opportunity to impact an industry, impact the culture and the mindset around food safety, quality, safety systems. It's so important, not only, like you say, to the work that you want to do because it's purposeful, but the impact you can have on so many people. So great stories. And I truly thank you for all of your time you've spent with me today.
Thanks, Deb. I appreciate the invite, as I said, and I really look forward to listening to some more of your podcasts. You're doing some great work. So thank you.
So if people wanted to reach out to you, because I know they will, you know, a lot of people, you're a connector. I do know that you've been connecting me with people, but if people don't know you and they want to reach out to you, how best can they do that?
Deb, I'm actually on LinkedIn, so Colin Christmas, you might be able to find me. And if you put in Colin Christmas Eagle Certification Group or Colin Christmas Nestle, because that's part of my career history as well, you might be able to find me. Or if not, people can reach out to yourself, Deb, and ultimately you could forward on my contact details. I'd be happy to talk to anyone that may be interested to continue this kind of conversation if it resonates with them.
All right. So Colin, thank you so much. Truly has been a pleasure. You have made a difference in so many lives, and I look forward to the second half of your career. Be well. Have a great day, Colin, and thank you to everybody for listening. Be well.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. For more information about our consulting or coaching services, please visit my website at dropinceo.com or visit our Drop-In CEO Facebook group to continue the conversation. Now go out, lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.